see.
You're pretty smart, sir.
Ain't a sergeant for nothing.
Suddenly, a figure rose amid the barbed wire of the gaff and grabbed the nearest Sekhman by the chest, the taloned fingers cutting deep into the cloth, ripping away a fistful of flesh through the encrusted rags. Blood gushed from the hideous wound, and the lifeless sergeant fell as the figure stuffed the still-beating heart into its drooling mouth.
Holy shit!
Muties!
Private fired his blaster. Surging into action, the others cut loose with their Kalashnikovs, but the stuttering weapons got up only 4 or 5 rounds before jamming. The huge invader staggered from the impact of the 7.62mm rounds, but didn't drop. As they frantically struggled to clear the jams, the wind slowed for a second, and the Sekhmen got a clear glimpse of the mutie. Giant fangs protruded from a grotesque face, with one nostril and 3 bulging eyes. Twice the size of a norm, its whole body was covered with mottled skin, and long claws sprouted from the knuckles of stubby hands. Swinging his blaster like a club, the private charged the mutie. It blocked the attack easily and grabbed him by the face, its claws sinking into the wrapping and ripping off most of his skin. Shrilly screaming, the man stood transfixed, naked eyeballs staring from a visage of raw flesh and bare teeth. As the mutie wasted moments consuming the dripping gobbet, the other guards slashed the ropes holding them in place. Even as the dying private collapsed, the creature charged the remaining Sekhmen, and they desperately dived out of the way. The mutie slammed hard into the tank, its claws raising sparks as they raked along the pre-dark armor. Struggling with his long blaster, the remaining private got off another shot, and the mutie screamed as fingers exploded off its hand. Hooting in pain, it kicked out a clawed foot. Backing up, the corporal cursed as the wrappings were ripped away, exposing his bare chest with 3 thin lines across his flesh, oozing droplets of blood. Death had missed by the thickness of a shirt.
Ass sucker!
And insanely, he charged, slamming the butt of his rifle into the thing's misshapen face. The wooden stock cracked from the force of the blow, fangs and yellow blood spraying into the storm. The remaining private ducked low and slashed at its belly, but only scored a deep cut in the mutie's hip. The creature stabbed for his throat, and he raised the rifle to block. The weapon was knocked from his grip by the powerful blow, and the corporal stabbed the creature in the back of the neck from behind. Instantly, the being tried to turn, but was barely able to move with its spinal column damaged. The corporal roared in anger and twisted the knife hard. The mutie jerked wildly as if being hit with bullets from a dozen different directions. A chance blow from a flailing arm took the corporal across the face, and there was a crunch as his nose shattered. Blood began to spread across the cloth wound around his head.
Son of a bitch!
He shoved the knife in deeper, then jerked it loose to plunge it in again and again.
Filthy, mutie bastard!
Shouting obscenities, the Sekhmen slashed the creature across the belly, then upward. Writhing entrails slithered into view. As the dying creature fell to the ground, it weakly snapped at the nearest man, almost biting him in the groin. Dropping their useless blasters, the guards savagely fell upon the thing, wildly hacking at the body until it was in several pieces. Then they stomped the remains under their combat boots, anger and fear fueling their rage. Minutes passed, with only the sounds of their labored breathing and the snap of bones faintly discernible over the moaning storm. The plexiglass windows of the large brick building rattled from the force of the wind. The main door was bolted shut, and heavy blankets hung from the lintel, cutting the wind whenever somebody entered or departed. That helped, but it didn't completely stop the pervasive black grit from sweeping across the armory every time the door was used. Sitting in the fireplace was an electric heater, the bright red coils steadily sending out waves of soothing warmth. Numerous gun racks dotted the wall. One held revolvers and boxes of ammo, another contained pump-action shotguns, while the rest were filled with AK-47 assault rifles, the metal shiny with fresh oil, the wooden stocks gleaming with polish. Stacks of loaded clips filled shelves, along with neat piles of ammo boxes. Crates of grenades were piled on the floor next to trunks of MRE packs. Originally, this building had been the armory for the complex, but was now in the process of becoming the throne room for the new Baron of Shilohville. William Sheffield always kept his weapons close and his enemies dead, to paraphrase an old saying. An air conditioner was nestled in the wall, its front masked with a heavy blanket and a lot of gray tape. Something rattled non-stop inside the machine, the noise fluctuating with every gust. On a small table, off in a corner by itself, a shortwave radio was hardwired to a nuke battery from a military vehicle. The speakers hissed with the usual background of static from the isotopes in the atmosphere. A coffee maker bubbled softly on a sideboard, serving trays heavily laden with loaves of canned bread, slices of canned meat, and gray military cheese. A bottle of shine stood near some glasses and a box of cigars. A dozen SEC men, armed with AK-47s, lounged before the fireplace, sipping coffee from ceramic mugs, smoking cigs, and cleaning their blasters. Sitting prominently in the middle of the enormous room was an ornate chair holding a big man who was reading computer printouts. A willowy blonde stood nearby, watching over his shoulder and making low comments and suggestions. The man was tall and heavily muscled, his neck and hands corded with hard tendons. He was wearing a crisp blue shirt and matching pants, the boots glossy with polish. A huge 50-caliber Desert Eagle pistol rested in a hip holster, with a sleek 9mm Heckler & Koch pistol riding in a shoulder rig. A white scarf was tied about his thick neck, more to keep out the draft than for any sartorial effect. His thick black hair was cut short, and a pattern of tiny round scars marked the left side of his face. It looked as if he had taken a shotgun blast directly into the face and had somehow survived. The truth was much more painful than that. Baron Sheffield listened to the storm rage outside.
Fucking weather.
Laying aside the report, he sipped at a mug of coffee, making a bitter face.
Blah!
He threw the cup onto the floor.
A blasted ashes into everything. The food, blasters. I'm surprised it isn't inside the fucking ammo.
Thumbing live rounds into an empty clip, a sergeant spoke up.
How long can we expect the weather to be like this, my lord?
Another week, possibly more. Silas was an ass. Using the kite to blast the whole countryside has only destroyed our food supply.
The Baron pulled a Tecna knife from his belt and imagined what he would have done to the old fool before allowing him to finally die. He was the fool for waiting so long before torturing the white coat. Silas would have told him everything. Eventually.
Maybe when the rains come.
The acid rain? That'll only make things worse, not better, fool. How can farmers grow crops in ash with acid? Hell, there aren't any fields in this valley anyway.
That problem is a long way in the future, sir.
Is that right? How comforting.
Besides, I thought there was plenty of food in the Quonset, sir.
Two bullet scars marked either side of this lieutenant's throat, and there was a white patch in his dark hair where a slave's axe had struck but failed to kill. Sheffield scowled at the SEC man.
We have 6 tons of MRE packs in the warehouse, Lieutenant. Our last gift from Dr. Jamevu. After that's gone, we'll be forced to get food from hunters and farmers as we used to do.
The sergeant arched an eyebrow.
But, sir, there are no more farms in the Shiloh Valley.
Exactly. What the kite didn't destroy, the ash is polluted. There won't be any new crops around here for years, maybe decades.
My lord, I have seen you use the kite to break up acid rainstorms and drive them away. Can't you do the same now with the ash?
Thoughtfully, Sheffield stared at the blonde woman. It was a smart suggestion. Colette never failed to surprise him. She was the only woman wearing the blue shirt of a SEC man at the Shiloh complex. Captured from a caravan passing through Tennessee, her youth and beauty had sent the girl directly to the gaudy house. She was attractive despite a large nose. The golden blonde hair, emerald green eyes, and her big breasts made men think of her only as a hot slut. Yet during the slave revolt, she had fought with the SEC men against the other slaves. When the revolt was finished, she directed the gravediggers. That got her out of the chains, and because of her special talents, she soon became Sheffield's bed warmer. Then, over the long months, a lover, somebody he could talk to and confide with. Colette was uneducated but smart, and always gave good advice. When Silas died and Sheffield took over the base, he needed somebody he could trust to be the new SEC chief, so he gave the job to Colette. A few of the Blues grumbled over the matter. A former slave as their chief? It was an outrage.
She fucked a couple, killed the rest, and the men now obeyed her without question. That was when Sheffield discovered how good a fighter she was. Lean and strong, Major Colette was a chilling machine, an expert with